Good evening. Shabbat shalom.
Shabbat shalom.
I am very excited to be here tonight. So excited that when I had to drive from Montana to here through Wyoming, I didn't think that 75 and 80 were adequate speeds. So I got a ticket coming here tonight. It's not my first one. It won't be my last. They asked me why I was speeding. I was telling them because their speed limits are too low. My wife had said, she called me almost immediately. It's almost like she has a sensor. She knew exactly that something had happened. So she called and she said, how are things going? And I said, well, I got a ticket. She said, again? And I said, yeah, but this one was a blessing. She goes, how was it a blessing? I said, because it was a moving violation. So I am very excited to be here. If you didn't like that joke, there's more to come. We have just gone to Montana this month to plug my youngest son into university. So dad jokes is all I have left, and I have no one to share them with anymore. So now I have to share them with congregations. I was told, I think, that I have 45 minutes tonight. Is that correct? Okay. Well, I only have 15 minutes of material, so I'll make it feel like 45. For those of you that don't know me, my name is Eugene Bach. I have been living and serving in China for more than 20 years. That's where I live now, together with my wife. I have two children. One is in senior military college right now in his senior year, training to be an officer in the Marine Corps. My youngest just started at Montana State University, training to be an officer in the Air Force. So they both decided to come back and join the military. They have had enough of God's army time with dad in China. And so they want to come and try their hand out at the U.S. military. And we're extremely excited to be here in the United States. And I'm very honored to be here tonight. Now, I've got quite a task ahead of me, to be honest, because I have a German background, born in America, in front of a Jewish congregation sharing about China. I don't know if you can tell by looking at me, but I'm not Chinese. But I want to share with you what's happening inside of China. And I think that tonight and tomorrow morning are very unique opportunities. I'm going to be sharing tomorrow morning as well. That's a threat. Tonight, I want to share something that I think is really amazing. I work for an organization called Back to Jerusalem. We call it an organization, but it's not really an organization. It's a vision. It's a vision that we call Back to Jerusalem, and this year, in the year 2020, is the 100-year anniversary for this vision. You see, 100 years ago, there were two things that started in China. One was called the Communist Party. That was when the Communist Party was born inside of China in Shanghai. Just a little bit north of Shanghai was a group of believers who sold everything with this vision to take the gospel to all the regions between China and Jerusalem. Now, as I share about China tonight, it might be that some of you think that, well, you know, China, that's kind of cool. I can take about 5 minutes of that, but it really doesn't have a lot to do with me. Tonight, I promise I'm going to be sharing something that will relate to you directly. You see, I think that by watching China, we can see prophecy unfold. By watching China, I think that we can also see something that if you watch close enough, you might be familiar with some of the things that you see that you think or that are said are Chinese, but actually relate very closely to the Jewish culture. You see, not a lot of people know this, but the Chinese culture and language are one of the oldest in the world. It's very much like the Aramaic languages. Actually, if you look at the Chinese language, I can tell you the gospel story by using the Chinese language because that language goes back over 2,500 years before Christ. A lot of people don't know this, but if you look at the Chinese language, there is the stories that were told by Moses in many of those characters. Did you know, for instance, that when I look at the word for good, you have man and woman together, that makes good. God made man and woman and saw that it was, that could be a coincidence, right? Okay, that's reaching. But let's talk about the word for boat. Do you know when you see a boat in the Bible for the very first time? You see a boat for the very first time when Noah makes the boat, right? If you look at the Chinese word for boat, there are three main characters. One is for a vessel, the other one is for eight, and the other one is for mouths. If you ask somebody, how many people do you have in your family? You say, how many mouths do you have in your family? I have two boys. I think that's a very adequate way of saying how many people you have in your family, how many people are consuming food. So when they talk about the word for boat in Chinese, it is eight people on a vessel. Think about the very first boat in the Bible. Noah, his wife, his three sons, and their three wives. Or their wives, right? Eight people. Again, stretching it. Sounds like a coincidence. Check this out. The word for deceiver, gui. The word for deceiver is a man in the garden with the devil telling him a secret. Let's look at the word for murder. Think about the very first time you see murder in the Bible. Cain and Abel, right? The word for murder is the same word for brother. So when you say brother, xiong, or when you say murderer, xiong, it sounds the same, but they have two different characters. The word for brother is a man with an empty head. A lot of women might think that a lot of men have empty heads. They may think that that's a very adequate description. The word for murderer is a man with a head with a mark on the head. The head has been marked. I can spend all night just on the Chinese language and how it relates to the Jewish stories. Today, when we pray inside of China, we pray to the God, the maker of all things. You see, a lot of people, when you think of Chinese and you think of the Chinese religion, many people begin to think, well, they're Buddhist, they're Taoist, they're Confucianists. Most recently, because of communism, they're atheists. But actually, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism are only around 3rd century, 4th century BC. For a culture that goes back 2,500 years before Christ, you have 2,000 years of religion to account for inside of China. What religion were the Chinese before Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism? Well, I can tell you. Has anybody here been to Beijing? One? Okay, so I can tell you anything about Beijing. You really won't be able to tell me wrong unless you pull up Google. So in Beijing is the largest altar in the world. It's called Tiantan, which is the Temple of Heaven. And at the Temple of Heaven, this is one of the largest in the world. I can take you all around there and show you the God that the Chinese served prior to Buddhism, Taoism, and Confucianism. You see, that God is known as Shangdi, still the same God that we pray to today as Christians in China. There are no images of that God allowed in Tiantan. Where do you get this word Shangdi? It comes from the ancient root word Shaddai. Let me read to you the ancient prayer that was prayed at Taishan in Shandong province when the Chinese race started with the very first emperor known as Huang Di. Tell me if this sounds familiar at all. As the emperor would go before the God of all creation and make his prayer, this is what was written. Of old, in the beginning, there was great chaos without form and dark. The five elements and planets had not begun to revolve, nor the sun and the moon to shine. You, O spiritual sovereign, first divided the grosser parts from the purer. You made heaven, you made earth, you made man. All things with their reproducing power get their being from you. Does that sound familiar at all? Does that, if I was to read that, would that not sound a little bit maybe like the American Standard Version of Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 and 2? I would submit that when you look at the Chinese culture, if it's true that the Bible that we read is not fairy tales, if it's true that the Bible that we read is true, wouldn't it then make sense that the oldest culture in the world would show signs of coming from Shem, Ham, and Japheth? Wouldn't it make sense that the language would tell the same stories as we have read for generations from the book and the writings of Moses? I don't come here to get you excited about anything new. I come to rejoice in the confirmation that our God is alive and his word is true. And we not only see it in the Bible, we can see it throughout history. And not only do we see it throughout history, I believe we will see it in the future as well. You see, as we look at China, there is something else that I think is very interesting. Their largest holiday. Does anybody here have any Chinese friends? And I'm talking about other than those that you go and meet at the Chinese restaurants. Yes, okay, Chinese friends. Anybody that has Chinese friends, you will know one thing. The largest holiday of the year is Chinese New Year. The largest holiday of the year is based off of the lunar calendar. The largest Chinese holiday of the year is based off of the equinox. You notice that we never have Easter at the same time every year. Why? Because it's not based on the solar calendar. It's based on the lunar calendar. We see the same inside of China. And around the same time as Passover, we also have the Chinese New Year. Something very interesting happens at almost every home throughout China during this time. They cover their doors with red banners on all the doorposts to make sure that any evil spirits do not stop at their home but passes by. Ask 10 Chinese experts where that comes from, and you'll get 10 different ideas. I was once told by a Jewish friend of mine, get two Jews in the same room, you get three different opinions. It's the same inside of China. But there's something amazing, not just about the past of China, but about the future of China. What I'm going to share tonight, just a little bit, is how China is the key, I believe, for us in 2021 to see the signs of coming prophecy. Now, I'm not going to be all complicated. I'm not the kind of person that's going to come to you and say, well, you take the number of blue moons in a year and you divide that by the number of Hebrew words that you find in the first chapter of every book and you carry the five and add the two and that's the day that Jesus is returning. I'm not giving that information tonight. Instead, I'm going to go to the words of Jesus himself. In chapter 24 of the book of Matthew, the disciples come to Jesus with a very curious question, a question that many of you might have today. When will all of these things come to pass? When will the end come? When are you going to return? How many people here would love to see the return of Jesus Christ? You don't have to raise your hand if you don't mean it. I raised my hand one time and didn't mean it. I did not grow up in a Christian home. My real father died when I was about 1 year old. My mother married and remarried several times. I grew up in a dysfunctional home. I got put on probation and house arrest when I was a teenager. Came to Christ around 14. My parents believe that the only reason I went to church when I got radically saved is because I wanted to go and see the girls at church. They weren't wrong. But I remember being at church one night and the pastor was begging and pleading and crying for Jesus to return. He was, Jesus, return, return, return. And I thought it was fun. One time around, two times around, but he began to plead even more, cry out even more. He was wanting Jesus to come so desperately that I thought that this man might actually be accused of a crime and want Jesus to return before the cops got there. And then I started to think myself, do I want Jesus to return tonight? I'm 14. I've got a lot of sinning to do. There are some things that I would like to do before Jesus comes. I listed those things and said, Jesus, you know, I want my driver's license. I would like to know what it's like to be married. Would it be possible that you can, you know, you've already waited this long. Could you delay it for a few more years? So when we raise our hand and say we want Jesus to return, do we live our life as if we want Jesus to return? You see, my background is also in the U.S. Marine Corps. My oldest was born on a Marine base, so it's kind of in his blood. I was in the Marine Corps, and I was based in Camp Pendleton, California, and my wife was just a little bit north of me in a place called Costa Mesa, and you had to take this dreadful 405 freeway every time up north to see her. And that freeway is like a parking lot during the afternoons. But I would drive it every day, and I would be with her until like 2-3 o'clock in the morning. And I just wanted to spend every moment together with her because I was in love. And I knew that I had to be back for 5 o'clock formation, so I would race back to base, and I would be dreaming about naps all day long. And I remember telling myself, as soon as they release us, I'm going straight to sleep. 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock came, and I was energized, and I was back on the road, driving back north to see her again. Why? Because when you're in love with somebody, you want to spend every waking moment together with them. When you fall in love with Christ, you want to spend every waking moment with him. And the more I fall in love with Christ, the more that I now identify with this pastor that was crying out, come, Lord, come. Now I understand. And if we truly want to see the return of Christ, Jesus told his disciples exactly when that would happen. Matthew chapter 24. He tells the disciples, you'll hear about war and rumors of war, and there'll be earthquakes and disasters in various places, but that's not yet the end. And you'll be dragged before leaders before my name's sake. But, verse 14, when this gospel of the kingdom is preached to all the nations, then the end will come. So if we really want to see the return of Christ, I propose to you that we have the power in our hands to expedite it by taking the good news of Jesus Christ to all the nations. Why do you think that Paul and Peter and the disciples were so hyper to share the gospel with as many people during their lifetime? I believe that if we are in love with Jesus Christ, we will be of that same mind, sacrificing everything to make sure everyone can hear the good news of Jesus Christ. Today, I don't bring you bad news about the people that have not been reached. I don't bring you bad news about how we could do more and how little we're doing. I bring you good news from China. Today, if you've not heard, allow me to be the one to share it with you. China is having the world's largest revival. We're seeing anywhere between 28,000 to 30,000 new believers every single day. It's about 1 million a month. Right now, I would venture to say that China is one of the most Christian populated nations in the world with the most Christians, not the most Christians, but very quickly approaching the most Christians of any nation in the world. And today I would debate with anybody to say that the number of believers inside of China outnumbers the members of the Communist Party. That's not the most exciting part. The most exciting part is their vision for Matthew chapter 24, verse 14. You see, the area between China and Jerusalem is known to be the most unreached area in the world today. 9 out of every 10 people that have never heard the gospel even one time live in that area between China and Jerusalem, which makes it easy. If you want to complete the Great Commission, that's your target area. If you want to complete the Great Commission, guys, this is our final frontier. They're all collected in the same area. This is also the area where 2/3 of the world's population live. 2/3 of the world's population are not born in America. They're not born in Europe. They're born between China and Jerusalem. So you have 2/3 of the world's population and 9/10 of the unreached people groups. As a church, where do you think that we spend our resources when we're trying to reach the unreached? not between China and Jerusalem. These are older statistics. I'm still going to rely on them. They're more than 10 years old. But from the last count, for every 100 US dollars given to missions, not given to the church, given specifically for missions, out of every $100 given to missions, only 2 pennies goes to the unreached people groups. Only 1 penny goes to the area between China and Jerusalem. And in fact, in the year 2019, America spent more money on Halloween costumes for their dogs than what they spent on evangelism in the most unreached area of the world. Do we want to see the return of Christ? Because if we do, then our actions have to follow our words. If we do, I've got good news. The church in China is rising, and they have a vision to send out over 100,000 missionaries between China and Jerusalem, preaching the good news of Jesus Christ to every nation, every village, every person between China and Jerusalem, completing the Great Commission. And I feel so excited to partner together with them. And I just want to share about that with you tonight. One of the things that is very special about this Back to Jerusalem vision is the direction. And this is the one thing that I want to share with you guys tonight before I come back tomorrow. You see, the direction for Back to Jerusalem is a westward movement. It's where the Chinese have set their sights towards Jerusalem and are closing the gap of the enemy's territory, making it smaller and smaller every day. But this is not anything new. This is a continuation from everything that we have read in the book of Acts. Let me share something with you. Now, what I'm sharing with you tonight is an inspiration. It is not dogmatic, meaning that there is not a mechanism that says that you can't go anywhere with the gospel. There is nothing that I'm sharing tonight that says China or Pakistan or Uzbekistan or Iran or North Korea are more important than your backyard. I'm saying that we are surrounded by the enemy, which is, like the Marines say, is a good place to be because I can shoot in every direction and hit someone. Right now, I believe that God is calling us to multiple battles on multiple fronts, and we all have a purpose to play. We all have a part to play. There is a great missiologist that I love, and he says it this way. He says, when it comes to missions, you only have 3 choices. 3 choices, and that's it. Go, send, or disobey. When we look at this area between China and Jerusalem, we see already a movement that God put into place from the very beginning. You see, if you go to the book of Acts and you start off from the very beginning, something amazing happens. We see Jesus with his disciples on the Mount of Olives. How many people here have been to the Mount of Olives? Okay, if you've been to the Mount of Olives, you can be my witnesses that when you are on the Mount of Olives, by default, you are facing the Eastern Gate. The Eastern Gate is facing eastward. You are facing westward. You're facing the Eastern Gate. If you go to the other side of the mountain, you're somewhere else. You're no longer on the Mount of Olives. When Jesus is on the Mount of Olives with his disciples, he is facing the West Gate by default. And it is here in Acts 1:8 where we often talk about the Great Commission, where Jesus actually puts out a map and says, you will be my witnesses, right? You will be my witnesses from Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the ends of the world. From here, what happens? Jesus ascends into heaven. The disciples are still on the Mount of Olives. From the very first movement that we see is a westward direction from the Mount of Olives to Jerusalem. From there, the author for the book of Acts starts to narrow down who he is following to Peter. And he follows Peter. We see that Peter then moves westward. He goes into the villages between Jerusalem and Joppa. Joppa is the most west that you can go, just south of Tel Aviv if you've ever flown into Israel. The oldest port in the world. That's the most western part of Israel. And it is there that the book of Acts then makes a transition from Peter to Paul. And we see that the book of Acts then follows Paul as he goes from Israel to Asia Minor into Europe. But before he goes into Europe, something very interesting happens in chapter 16. You see, what happens in chapter 16, this is very important for us in China. And that is, in 16, Paul says that he and the team tried to go east to Asia, and they're stopped by the Holy Spirit. They try to go north to Bithynia, but they're stopped by the Spirit of Jesus. And then they have a vision of Troas. If you ever get a chance to go to Troas, I would highly recommend it. It's one of the coolest places to go. You can only find it by putting the 8-digit coordinates into your GPS. There's no real directions. When you get there, it's in the middle of a field, and you have all these ruins everywhere with nobody around for miles, nobody trying to sell you coffee cups, nobody selling you tickets, and you can spend the whole day there just hanging out and imagining what it was like for Paul and his companions. And then there he gets a vision of a man from Europe that takes him to Macedonia, northern Greece. So here we see this movement already in the book of Acts. There were disciples. I followed in their footsteps. There were disciples that go to the east. Do we have our second slide, number 2? If you look at this just really quick Mickey Mouse diagram that we made, that round dot, that black dot kind of represents Israel. Israel's very small. For those of you that don't know it, I can probably drive from the western part of Israel to the eastern part of Israel much faster than going from the most western outskirts of Denver to the most eastern outskirts of Denver. It's a pretty small country. So our black dot almost covers all of Israel. But that's basically, we try to represent for you to see that this is the area that Jesus would have covered by foot. From there, you can see where the disciples began to move westward. Because it wasn't just in the book of Acts. We see that Paul himself says in the book of Romans that he is ready to go to Spain. Why Spain? Because Spain was thought to be the end of the world at that time. So you had this westward movement, and revivals followed. So you had revivals break out in Asia Minor, revivals break out in Europe, revivals break out in Africa. I spent about 6 years of my life following in the footsteps of the history of the church, trying to figure out how did the gospel get from Jerusalem to me? We put that together in a Bible study. Can we put up slide number 1, please? I have a book that is coming out next month. It's called China End Time Prophecy. Many of the things that I'm sharing about tonight are touched on in depth in this book, slide number 3. And we have a free gift that we would like to give to you. It's a book that we did not bring together with us. This is a 9-week Bible study series where we follow each continent as the gospel leaves from Jerusalem. We follow the book of Acts, the first century, second century, third century church, going through history, going to the location as revivals broke out and as God's Spirit moved and swept across Africa and Europe, then around to the Americas, where we had 2 great revivals. Today, revivals are sweeping through Asia. China's having the world's largest revival. South Korea having the world's largest church. Something amazing has been taking place. And I believe God is behind it. 100 years ago, when the Back to Jerusalem vision was just kind of conceived, 90% of the world's Christian body lived in Europe and America. The Americas, North and South. Today, 60% of the world's Christian body are in Asia and Africa. The dynamics are changing. God is moving, and he's no respecter of persons. I can tell you right now that if I go and I follow Islam, I can find that Mecca is their headquarters. If I go and follow Hinduism, India is their headquarters. If I go and I follow Buddhism, Lhasa is their headquarters. But God is where his people are, and he dwells among them. And it doesn't matter your nationality, your language. I often tell people, I can sit beside somebody who comes from my hometown on an airplane. We can speak the same language, enjoy the same foods, grow up with the same culture, get all the same jokes. Next to me, I can have somebody from Pakistan. I may not be able to communicate with them one stinking word. But if they are a believer and the person from my hometown is not, I share more in common with the believer. Our ethos comes from the same place. Our destination is the same place. Our father is the same father, and we are of the same family. When I see the kingdom of God moving into these nations, I am seeing societies transformed. You can watch the news and see many bad things about China. I can tell you many of the bad things about living in China, but I'm also here to tell you that we have brothers and sisters that are growing by the millions. They are joining together with the world body, with the world church body, and they are going into the nations heralding the good news of Jesus Christ, and they are willing to give their lives in the same way that the disciples in the book of Acts were willing to give their lives to share the good news of Jesus Christ. And I'm excited to call them one of my brothers and sisters. If we look at what is taking place inside of China today, I can also say that the Chinese are going into areas where people desperately need the good news. I just got a message last week. There were 120 students that were abducted by Boko Haram in Nigeria. They took 120 students from Bethel High School. There is a Christian, Bethel Baptist High School in Nigeria. 120 students were abducted by this ISIS-connected group known as Boko Haram. And I remember a woman wrote to me, and she did it on social media, and she said, you know, I see that there is prayer from believers like myself from all over the world. And I have to ask myself, Eugene, why would God let this happen? I've been praying for these students. Why can't we see God answering our prayer? My heart broke. I said, dear sister, do you not know that today the world's largest religion is Christianity? Do you not know that we as Christians make up a third of the world's population and we control more than three-fourths of the world's resources? Do you not know that we control the most powerful economies in the world? We control the most powerful militaries in the world. We control the most powerful government bodies in the world. How do you know that God has not already answered our prayers? How do you know that it's not God who's not listening to us, but it is us not listening to him? If we have been praying for God to give us the resources that we need in order to complete the Great Commission, congratulations, brothers and sisters, because I believe that God has answered our prayers. Do you know that we have 78,000 evangelicals for every one unreached people group? I just heard my brother get up here and read about one such unreached people group. 78,000 evangelicals for every one evangelical. We don't even need to pray for a miracle. God has already answered our prayers if we would only use what we have in our hands. When we see the movement of the Chinese, I was saying before how we can see this Western movement that started in the book of Acts. But we see it earlier than that. You know, if you look at the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve sinned, there was only one angel used to guard the garden on the eastern side. There's this pattern that continues on and on, that the further east you go, the further you are away from God, and the further west you come, the closer you are. You see, when Jesus gave the Great Commission to his disciples, many of them thought that there might have been an end of the world. But Jesus knew, God knew, we now know that this is a globe. We are on a circle. Your starting point also becomes your finish line. What started in Jerusalem returns to Jerusalem in this westward manner. In the book, the one that we were just sharing, China and End Time Prophecies, you know one of the things that set apart the Jewish temple from the pagan temples? Pagan temples often faced north and south. But the temple that was built to honor God only had one entrance and one exit. There was no fire escape. Well, there may have been a fire escape. Run out the door when you feel the fire. You approach from the east and you move closer to God, the holiest of holies, in the west. This is why the Western Wall, the Wailing Wall, where we still see people praying today, the temple even itself was constructed in this way. If you ever look at the sacrifice of the red heifer and the red heifer bridge, where the priest would purify themselves and then move westward towards the temple. You know, today, instead of saying Passover, we often say the word Easter. Do you know where this word Easter comes from? German. It's a German word. Means easterly. You know, right at Passover, the sun rises, shines from the east towards the west, illuminates the opening to the temple and shines within the temple of God. Right at Passover. So we see over and over, like I said, this is not dogmatic. I'm not saying that the gospel has to take place in this way. But what is fascinating is watching God move in China in this continual direction of going west. And I have to tell you, working together with China is a blast. Why? Because the Chinese are never seen as being believers. When we go together to preach the gospel in Iran, North Korea, Somalia, Sudan, they never see the Chinese and say, oh, those are Christians. Me, I get identified right away. Every time I go to Iran, they always put me in the back room, question me for hours. I can testify that the guy with the rubber glove is quite gentle, but they never stop the Chinese. The Chinese come up less than 1 minute, in and out. God created a back door with a communist nation. A nation that is persecuting his church. I believe, and let me say this with a great deal of gratitude for being born in this country. I did 2 tours in the Persian Gulf. I have 2 boys that are about ready to put on uniform. I love this nation. But my salvation does not rest on the rise or fall of America. So when the wrong president or the wrong government or the wrong laws begin to be passed, I don't lose faith because I don't put my faith in them. You see, who the Father sets free is free indeed. You can put me in prison, but you can't legislate in, and you certainly can't legislate out the freedoms that I have. When I'm working together with the Chinese, though they come from a communist country, they don't mind. It provides good cover. They're not seen as being Christians. They're not seen as being believers. And that allows them to move in and out of societies and preach the good news. Tomorrow, I would love the opportunity, if I'm not kicked out after tonight, to share about the work that the Chinese are doing and how they're doing it in closed countries such as North Korea, such as Iran, such as Iraq. I want to share with you firsthand testimonies. I know because I've been there. I've been there together with our Chinese brothers and sisters. I've witnessed them do it, and I've been in awe. We've got a few books that I would love to share with you guys tonight. They're out on the back table. Everything that we have is for donation only. If you see any book that you want and you don't have a donation to give, don't worry. Take it with you. We want to invest in your life so that you will continue to pray for us. We have several books. I would love to share them together with you. One of them I'm going to be sharing about a little bit tomorrow more. This is a brother that I spent 2 years with him writing his story. He has a little small church in China of only about 10 million believers. And he talks about how God took him from being a communist government official to one of the most famous underground house church pastors in all of China. You can find him on Wikipedia. His name is Zhang Rongliang. Go ahead, spell it out. Zhang Rongliang, you can get this book in the back. Any donation you give, you take it with you. If you don't have a donation, you take the book with you anyway. I want to leave you with one testimony, if I could. There is a special children's book that we have brought together with us. This children's book also comes with a prayer bear. We want to make sure that any child here tonight gets one of these prayer bears for free. Do we have enough, Thane? Thane, this guy, this handsome man sitting right here in the middle, he is my good friend and partner, drove over to be with us tonight. He will be the one that will be able to helping you and answering questions. If you have a young one, a grandchild, a child, niece, nephew, we would love to give them one of these prayer bears. This prayer bear is made by hand by women that we work together with that are victims of ISIS in Iraq. Each one of them that has made one, they put their name inside of the prayer bear. These are not for free, but they won't cost you any money. We ask this, every child that gets one, may this be a reminder to them to pray for the persecuted church. We covet the prayers of children. And in fact, that's why we started making children's books to go along with our prayer bear. The children's books tell true stories from the mission field. How cool would it be, just really quick, how cool would it be if our children grew up, instead of having heroes that are in the NBA or Hollywood, individuals that they would look up to in secular society, instead, we share with them stories about heroes of the faith who have given it all to preach the gospel to those who need it most. This story here, the yellow one specifically, is a good friend of mine, a pastor that I served together with. We've been working together for many years. We've traveled to America together. He'd never had a fortune cookie until he came to America for the very first time. We traveled to Cambodia, Vietnam. We've been to many different nations all around the world together. He's one of my best friends. And I heard a story that I had to share with others about his life. You see, he was arrested and thrown in prison because he was preaching the good news. The warden hated Christians. Soon as he pulled him into the prison, he told all the prisoners in the prison cell, beat the tar out of him. Urinate, defecate, make him miserable on him. They put him in the prison. The guards came around the next day and found out that every prisoner in that cell became a believer. That warden was hot. Pulled him out, had him beaten, threw him in another cell. That cell, everybody in that cell became a believer. This time, the warden pulls him out, beats him to every inch of his life. They think he was dead. Take his lifeless, limp body and toss him into the cell. Tell all the prisoners, urinate, defecate on his body. The next morning, my friend wakes up. He's laying in the only bed in the cell. And everybody's looking at him saying, please tell us about your God. You see, what he didn't know is that when he was thrown onto the ground, everybody thought he was dead and a light shined on his body. There was no explanation for the light. There was no opening in a window. There was no reflection, but it was on his body. Chinese are superstitious. I'm not superstitious, but that would make me a little stitious. They go over, they grab him, they pull him over to the bed. And as they move him to the bed, the light follows him. And when he wakes up, he's healed. Now, I don't know where this fits in with your theology, but I can tell you that rumor started in that prison that anybody that is sick can go and lay in that same bed and be healed, and they were. Something then happened at the prison. There was an individual that was a VIP, a very important prisoner. And he died on the warden's watch. And the warden knew China doesn't play. If they find out this VIP, this very important prisoner died on my watch, I'll be following him. And China doesn't have a death row that lasts for years at a time like in America. They bring you in, they fry you, they send you out. It's a pretty expedited process. The warden got scared, so scared that the warden said, send for that pastor. Brought the prisoner into his office and he said, listen, we have a situation. Somebody died. I heard you're the person to talk to for dead people. Can you pray for him and bring him back to life? My pastor friend said, yes, but before we do that, you have to give your heart to Christ. Now imagine this scenario, the warden in his office on his knees, the prisoner standing up and over him. That is not protocol. The VIP prisoner was brought back to life. The warden gave his heart to Christ. You know who told me that story? The warden. The warden is now a member of his church. I'd been traveling with this pastor for so long. I felt offended. Like, how in the world have you never told me about this story? Brother, if that story had happened to me, I'd had 15 books. I'd have put charts out, 15 steps on how to heal people in prison. I'd have made a movie. It'd have been a blockbuster. There has been nobody in my life that would not have heard that story. How did you not tell me about that story? He smiled and said, because that's in the past. The things that God is going to do in the future are even greater. And I agree. I want to thank you guys so much for allowing me to be here tonight. Forgive me if I went over time. It was a pleasure. It was an honor. And I hope to be here to share even more with you tomorrow morning. God bless you.